of Genesis, chapter 21, book of Genesis, chapter 21, a passage that we've preached from in the past. Read verses 14 through verse 19. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water, and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs. And she went and sat her down over against him a good way off, as it were a bow shot. For she said, "Let me not see the death of the child." And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, "What aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation." And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. By way of background, when Abraham was 75 years old, God promised him that he and Sarah would have a son. 10 years passed. We read in Genesis 16:1, "Now Sarah, Abram's wife, bare him no children." 10 years since the promise, Sarah, aged, well past childbearing years, comes up with the idea that Hagar, their Egyptian maid, could be a surrogate mother. So Sarah encourages her husband, Abraham, to impregnate Hagar. You see that in Genesis 16, verses 2 and 3. We read in verse 4 of Genesis 16, "And Hagar conceived." Once Hagar conceived, she despised Sarah. We read there in Genesis 16. And though it was Sarah that advised or devised this wicked and sinful plan, when she saw that Hagar despised her, she blamed Abraham. He, in response, told Sarah that she had the authority to do with Hagar as she pleased. We're told in verse 6 of Genesis 16 that Sarah treated Hagar harshly and unkindly. And as a result of this treatment, we read that Hagar fled. And I'm sure that on the part of Hagar, there was anger, there was bitterness, there was hurt, disbelief, perhaps, at what has transpired. And what you see there is an entire household and lives have been shaken and disrupted because of sin. And that's not our subject, but that there's a message there. Reading on in chapter 16, where again Hagar has fled, we're told that the Lord appeared to Hagar. And he told her basically to return home and submit herself to Sarah. Basically what he's saying, again, this is not our message, but there's a message here. You go home and you do the right thing. Regardless of what Sarah's done, you go home and you do the right thing. From chapter 16 and verse 16, Hagar would give birth to Ishmael when Abraham was 86 years old, 11 years after the promise. In chapter 21, keep in mind, chapter 16, verse 16, Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar gave birth. In Genesis 21, we're told in verse 2 that Sarah conceived. From this conception, of course, came Isaac. Verse 5, when Abraham was 100 years old. Do the math. 14 years between Ishmael and Isaac. That's important. Because when we view Hagar and Ishmael, we're not dealing with a baby. We're not dealing with a little child. Well, you read on in Genesis 21 and verse 8. You read of the weaning of Isaac. That would have occurred between the ages of 2 and 3. So that makes Ishmael between 16 and 17 years old. And it was during this time that Sarah saw Ishmael, now between the ages of 16 and 17. He's mocking Isaac. She becomes infuriated. Says to Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son. And that, of course, was extremely grievous to Abraham, but God instructed him to do as Sarah had said. There in verses 11 through 13 of chapter 21. Again, a picture of the troublesome effect of sin. And all of that brings us to our text in verse 14. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. From that point to verse 19, we see Hagar and Ishmael. Again, Ishmael is between the ages of 16 and 17. We see Hagar and Ishmael in the wilderness of Beersheba. And once again, we see the disastrous effects of sin. But reading the account, I call your attention to verse 14. We read of a bottle of water. Down in verse 15, I call your attention to something that happened. And the water was spent in the bottle. And then in verse 19, I call your attention to two words, and God. And God. And then also in verse 19, a well of water. So you have an empty bottle. You have God, you have a well of water. And then I call your attention in verse 19, and she went and filled the bottle with water. Our subject this morning is where empty bottles are filled. So first of all, we want to take a look at Hagar and Ishmael in the wilderness, which is a picture of desperate need. First of all, there was a drastic change in circumstances. Because of sin, things had been very tense in Abraham's tent for several years. But things came to a head when Sarah said to her husband, cast out this bondwoman and her son. Again, verse 14, Abraham rises up early in the morning and he supplies Hagar and Ishmael with bread and a bottle of water. No doubt, Abraham gave them what he thought would be sufficient for the journey. They are then told to vacate the premises and they are basically expelled from the security and shelter that Abraham's tent provided. And we read those words, and she departed. And we need to see them in our minds leaving. And she departed. Their circumstances have taken a very drastic change. And she departed. That day, they left all their future plans, left all their dreams. That day, they left with nowhere to go and not knowing what they would do. So you see them and they head into uncertainty. And I am sure that Hagar and Ishmael both felt some anger, some bitterness, some resentment, no doubt betrayal and hurt, a sense of loss as they left Abraham's tent that day. And I'm sure that Hagar is thinking, how could Abraham allow this to happen? Do I mean nothing to him at all? You can only imagine what's going through her mind. No doubt there's a degree of humiliation. There's heartbreak. There's disappointment. There's great stress. And you see them heading into the wilderness. Which brings us to the place of Hagar and Ishmael. We read in verse 14. That they are in the wilderness or in the desert of Beersheba. Not a place where you would find grassy and flowery meadows, but a very dismal and grim place. An empty place, a solitary and scary place. No doubt a very unsettling and restless place. A place of desolation, a place of trial and difficulty. A place of extreme struggle, a place that would cause much trouble and distress. It's a very apt picture of the world in which you and I live. A world filled with devastation, barrenness, and desolation. So there they are in the wilderness of Beersheba. Look at the scene. You have a woman and her only son. They have been betrayed. They have been cast out from the comforts and provisions of Abraham's tent. And they are in the wilderness of Beersheba. There are dangers everywhere. They are very vulnerable as they are in this wilderness. Then consider the journey of Hagar and Ishmael in this wilderness. Again, verse 14. We see that they wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. That is, they roamed that wilderness. They drifted. They strayed through this wilderness. That gives us a picture of two people with no real direction in their lives. They wandered. And they did so to no avail. You see them as they wander in the trackless sand of the desert. And as they do, the hot desert sun beats down upon them. No doubt occasionally they would stop, eat some bread, take a drink of water, and then move on. A little while later, they would become thirsty again and hungry. Eat a little more bread, drink some more water, enabling them to tread on through the desert sand. This would continue to happen. And it is no doubt becoming more and more difficult, more and more of a chore for them to walk. And the water is getting further and further to the bottom of the bottle. Until they're taking very little sips, conserving every bit they can. And eventually, verse 15 happens. And the water was spent. The water was used up. It was consumed. It was drained. And the water was spent in the bottle. Now, in a desert, those are dreadful words. The water was spent. Those are dreadful words if you're in a desert. And the water was spent in the bottle. That water that was so vital to their existence was no more. That water that was so crucial for them to get through that desert, it's gone. And the water was spent in the bottle. The bottle was dry. There's hot sand everywhere, but no water. And the water was spent in the bottle. So there they are with an empty bottle. No relief in sight. As far as they can see is desert. They're exhausted. And the bottle is empty. It is grueling out there in the hot desert. And the bottle is empty. And there they are wandering in the desert. Really no place to go. Really not getting anywhere. They're just wandering. And they are physically and mentally drained. And it is becoming increasingly difficult to lift their feet out of the sand. So you look at them, and their walk probably eventually turns to staggering and stumbling. They're utterly exhausted. Can't go on any further. And the bottle is empty. Their mouths are parched. Perhaps their lips are beginning to crack and their tongues beginning to swell. They turn the bottle upside down, hoping for just a drop. Perhaps they reach their finger into the bottle, hoping to find a little moisture so they can lick their finger. But the bottle is empty. The bottle is empty. At some point in the journey, Hagar realizes that her son Ishmael is dying. And realizing that he's not going to make it, in an attempt to give him some relief from the sun, she lays him under one of the shrubs. And there they are, in terrible anguish, and the bottle is dry. They need water. They need water. And the bottle is dry. Ishmael is obviously slipping. We read in verse 16 that she, not being able to bear the sight of the death of her son, with broken heart, she goes from the place and she lays him where she had laid him, and she lifted up her voice and wept. So you see her now, she's away from her son, about a bow shot. And you look at her. And there she sits. Her son is dying. The water is spent in the bottle. She's a wreck. Her determination has been drained. She is distraught. She is overcome. She is at her wit's end. She's in a situation that she cannot fix. She cannot fix this. And we read that she lifted up her voice and wept. And if we could listen in, you would hear the sounds of heartbreak. You would hear the sounds of inconsolable grief and sorrow, and the sounds of despondency. What a terribly sad picture. Then we want to notice God in this place of need. So there is Hagar. She's exhausted. She is parched with thirst. If she looks around, all she can see is hot desert sand and the certain death of her only son. She has more heartache, more hurt, more sorrow, more grief than she can possibly handle. She has a heavier burden than she can carry. And the water that is so essential to her life and her son's life has been depleted. The water bottle is dry. But we read in verse 17, and the angel of God. Now this will be another message. It would be another message, but I believe the angel of God is Christ. Called to Hagar out of heaven. So there she is in a place of desolation. A place of misery and despair and death. And God called to Hagar out of heaven. The voice of Almighty God broke through everything. And He speaks directly and clearly to her. Again, she has wandered until all the food and the water is gone. She has wandered until all of her strength is gone. She has wandered until all of her hope is gone. And there she is, with an empty bottle and weeping. But read those words, and the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven. She had wandered, but God had not lost track of her. She had wandered, but the Lord knew where she was. She had traveled far, but not far enough to get beyond the watchful eye of God. Notice, keep a mark here in Genesis, but go over to Psalm 139. Psalm 139. Verse 7, whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. Thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me. So there's Hagar on the wither. She has wandered and wandered and wandered. But she couldn't get beyond God. You can wander a long way. A child of God can wander a long way. But I want you to know today you cannot wander to the place where God is not. God called to Hagar. He knew her heart. He knew all of her sins. He knew all of her sorrows. He knew her turmoil. He knew her trouble. And God called to Hagar out of heaven. And He very tenderly and compassionately asked her a question. What aileth thee, Hagar? Now God never asked questions for information's sake, He already knows. But He asks questions so that we will respond. He says to her, Hagar, what's wrong? Hagar, what is it that makes you so sad and so uneasy? What is it that causes you so much turmoil? What is it that makes you so troubled? God called to Hagar out of heaven. And He says, what aileth thee, Hagar? That's a good question. That's a good question to everyone here. What aileth thee? In that question, there's an invitation. And there's an encouragement for her to tell him. God is basically telling her, tell me, Hagar. Tell me. What a blessing when God comes to you and says, tell me. And that's what he's doing here. He wanted her to tell him the hurting of her heart, the torment she had endured, all the pain that she was experiencing, all the future plans that seemed to be ruined. He wanted to hear it all. The Bible does not record Hagar's answer. But oh, what a story she had to tell. She could tell of her sin. She could tell of Sarah's scheme. She could tell how she was filled with hope when Ishmael was born, and then how Sarah demanded that she be cast out. She could tell how disappointed and hurt she was by Abraham. And she could say, and now here I sit, surrounded by the sand, no strength, no hope, no water, and my son's going to die. What aileth thee, Hagar? He was asking her to bear her soul. And God never does that for nothing. But with the question, there's a willingness to help. What aileth thee, Hagar? 1 Peter 5, verse 7, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. He then sought to comfort and cheer her. He says, fear not. What aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not. She was filled with fear because she knew in her mind that her only son was going to die. But God says to her, fear not. And then notice what follows those two words. For God. For God. He's the reason she should not fear. She was filled with fear because she could see no relief in sight. She was filled with fear because all of her resources are gone. She's filled with fear because she has no power to change her situation. But God says, fear not, for God. And then God assures her that he is aware of where he is. Notice those last three words in verse 17, where he is. It is, I have heard, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Hey, God, I not only know where you are, I know where he is. Fear not, for God. And then he instructs her, verse 18. He says, arise. That is, leave the place where she was. And he says, lift up the lad. That is, raise him up from the ground. Hold him in thine hand. That is, take hold of him in your hand. And this is followed by a promise. For I will. For I will. Make him, the very one who is about to die, I will make him a great nation. For I will make him a great nation. So there's the promise of God. And then God did something to Hagar. Verse 19, and God opened her eyes. If you were to ask people, what is Hagar's biggest problem at this time? Some might say, well, she's been cast out and sent away. She's in a wilderness surrounded by helplessness. Her son is dying. The bottle is dry. But none of these were Hagar's biggest problems. They were all problems. They were all obstacles. But they weren't her greatest source of trouble. Her greatest source of trouble is revealed from what God did for her. And God opened her eyes. I mean, Hagar could see that she was lost in the wilderness. She could see that. She could see that there's sand everywhere. She could see that her water bottle is empty. She can see that her son is dying. She could see all of those things with great clarity. But the one thing she needed to see, she couldn't see. That was her biggest problem. And it's often our biggest problem. We can see a lot of things clearly. But the one thing we need to see, we don't. And that's why we read, and God opened her eyes. Because that was her real problem. Perhaps she couldn't see because she was blinded by her sadness and her distress. But while her heart was breaking, while she was drawing her breath in agony, God opened her eyes. And there was a well nearby. The well had been there the whole time. But she didn't see it until God opened her eyes. While Hagar was going through this time of terrible tragedy, calamity, she's experiencing this affliction and adversity, what she needed was right there. It was right there. But she couldn't see it. And I can ask you today, what aileth thee? And all the stories that we could hear. But I want you to know what you need is right here. It's right there. It's right there. The God provided resources are right there. God opened her eyes. What's that mean? Well, it means that God showed her. And then notice what happened. And she saw. God opened her eyes and she saw. Why did she see? Because God opened her eyes. She didn't see before God opened her eyes. God opened her eyes and she saw. It wasn't that she just came to her senses. God did something to her. And there was a result. And she saw. So who gets the glory here? God does. Because God opened her eyes. And she saw. She saw as a result of what God did. What did she see? She saw a well of water. God opened her eyes. And she saw a well of water. There was a joyful or joyous discovery resulting from God opened her eyes. Now, if Sarah was to later tell this story, or Sarah Hagar was to later tell this story, do you think she would have said, "I saw a well of water"? I hope not. That's how a lot of God's people would tell it today. You know, all of a sudden I saw a well of water. Really. What made you see that well of water? God opened my eyes. He gets all the glory. Don't give the glory to Hagar. Give it to God. God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. And all the joy that came upon her when she saw that well. There she is in the hot desert. And right where she was, there is a well of God's providing. And whatever your wilderness is, wherever you are, right where you are, is a well of God's providing. You need to see it. God opened her eyes. And she saw a well of water. That well was there before Hagar and Ishmael got there. What you need will be there before you get there. You just need God to open your eyes to see it. The well was there, and God opened her eyes. Now, after God opened her eyes and she saw the well of water, she didn't just sit there and observe the well. Wow, that's a nice looking well. I bet there might be some water in that well. Hey, Ishmael! Look over here! There's a well! No, they did more than that. She went and filled the bottle with water. May I say, that's the bottle, and we, last time I preached on this, this was our emphasis, don't throw away your bottle. She went and filled the bottle that she never cast away. Even though that bottle was empty, she didn't toss it away. Don't toss away the bottle. Don't toss away your ability to receive, because God has a well where you can fill that bottle. Don't throw the bottle away. So God did a work in her wilderness. In whatever wilderness you might be in today, that's what you need. You need for God to do a work in your wilderness. The work that He did was He opened her eyes. And Hagar and Ishmael drank of God's provision, and they lived. So let's make some personal application. Before Abraham sent Hagar and Ishmael into the wilderness, he made an effort to prepare them for such by providing them with bread and a bottle of water. But I want you to know this. You will need more than man's preparation as you journey in the wilderness. Man's preparation will not be sufficient. Prepare all you want to. Nothing against preparing. Prepare all you want to, but I'm here to tell you it won't be enough. It won't be enough. It won't be sufficient. You need something more. Like Hagar and Ishmael, man's preparation will prove to be insufficient. And just like them, our soul may become parched. Your spirit may become dry and empty. The wilderness of this world has a very powerful draining effect upon spirituality. And at times the water will be depleted. And you might be just stumbling along. You might get to the point, I can't go on any further. But there's God. And He has what you need. I guarantee you that. He has what you need. However difficult the journey may become, no matter how grim it may appear, and though your bottle may be dry, and you may be weary with the journey, and your walk becomes a tremendous chore, and it feels like the sand is just getting deeper and deeper, and you're being pulled in by the sand, and the strength, the desire to go on is vanishing, and you're struggling to make it. Your bottle is empty. What you were depending upon is empty. It's no longer. And all you can see is the desert. And you're becoming discouraged. Don't throw away the bottle. Because out there in the wilderness, there is God. And no matter how far or long you've wandered in that wilderness, He hasn't lost track of you, and He knows you, and He knows your situation, He knows your circumstances, and He cares. And if you listen, He invites you to tell Him all. You don't have to tell me. Tell Him. You can tell Him, and I promise you, there's no need that He cannot meet. And I promise you, there's no bondage that He cannot set you free from. And there is no sin that He cannot forgive. And there is no chain that He cannot break. And there is no sorrow that He cannot comfort, no hurt that He cannot heal. In your wilderness, wherever it is, there is God. And He has a well. He has a well. There is a well of God's providing. You say, well, I can't see it. That may be very true. You need to pray that God would do a work in you. Because the well is there. God opened her eyes. And again, the well was there before they got there. And so it is with you and I. And in that well is the water that we need. In that well is abundant supply. In that well, there is spiritual uplifting and recovery. Don't depend upon man for spiritual uplifting. You're depending on the wrong source. God has a well. And in that well, there's spiritual uplifting, there's spiritual recovery, there's spiritual awakening, there's spiritual stirring, there's spiritual energizing, spiritual rejuvenating. There's everything you need in that well. Don't wander in the wilderness looking for what you need. God has what you need. Partake of it and live. God has a well. You might not see it, but there is a well. We pray God will open your eyes. You'll see it and you'll fill your bottle. And you'll partake of what God has provided. What Abraham provided ran out. It ran out. What God provided, they lived. We have a wonderful God. You may be here, you may have wandered. You may have wandered for years. I've known people that have wandered for decades. You can't wander far enough to get away from God. He knows where you are. Wherever you are, God is there. Brother Mark, if you come and lead us in verse song. Let's all stand. Brother Mark will lead us in singing.